Please join me in the serenity prayer.
God, grant me serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen.
Tonight our 40-minute speaker is Jim F. from West Hollywood.
Hi, my name's Jim, and I'm an alcoholic. And let's see, I walked in the rooms, I saw your beautiful faces, I knew I was home, and I never wanted another drink again. And that, no, that's not my story. Actually, I walked in the rooms, and I had an attitude, not gratitude. I had an attitude. I had a really bad attitude. I was young when I got sober. I'm sober 30 years, a little over 30 years. And one day at a time, you know, I had never had a checking account before I got sober. I never had a car in my own name, never had a place in my own name. And so everything I did, I've done everything growing up, I've done in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I mean, I was 5 years sober, and people were still saying to me, "Are you new?" I hate that when people ask, "Are you new?" I mean, by the time we got here, we are not new. We are either used or previously owned. We are not new, okay? Asking if we're new. I grew up in Beverly Hills, north of Sunset. That's very important that you know that. And I remember somebody once said, "Oh, I grew up near Beverly Hills, near Robertson and Pico." I said, "Oh, yeah, we had hired help from that area." I'm uppity too. We go by my mom, my great mom. She's 94 years old now, and she's wonderful. My mom is one. She's an art collector. We grew up in a house. It was a very well-known house. It's designed by a famous architect named Gregory Ayn. It's the largest home he ever built. It's on the state in Beverly Hills. You can't see the house from the street. And my father was a psychiatrist. And I never really felt part of that. Of that family. I never felt like there was something always never right. I mean, I'm Jewish. I'm not circumcised. This has started the problem right there. I mean, I never felt fit in. I went to an all-Jewish school. I tried to cut it off. I thought there was something wrong with me. So I didn't know why I had that. And I'm not your usual speaker. Anyway, my dad was, I never really got along with my dad. He he was a nice person, I guess. And when I was 18 years old, my father, who was a cat, divorced my mom, and he had married a patient 25 years his junior, and he committed suicide when I was 18. And right the day my dad committed suicide, I was mad. He had just bought another home in Beverly Hills for cash, and I wanted a new car. And I called him up on a Saturday, and I still remember this conversation because he said to me, "I can't afford to buy you a car." And I said, "Fuck you, I hope you die." It was the last time I ever talked to my father. And for years sober, years drinking, took me another 10 years of drinking, hard drinking for 10 years, was 7 years sober before I could even go to my father's grave. And he's buried in Sinai Mortuary in Burbank and Glendale, or Burbank, and Hollywood Hills. And I hated my dad. And, you know, if you think it's hard to make amends, try to make amends to somebody who's dead. Because it's even harder to make amends to somebody who's dead. And I would hear people say, "I don't want to talk to my parents." And I always told guys I sponsor, I said, "If you don't want to, you know, we only get two per lifetime." And I only am left with one. And I take very good care of the one I have. And the amends I make to my mother is not telling her what I did to her and remind her. It's to be, for the last 30 years, I have been the best son that I can possibly be. And that's all I can do. So I hid my father for years. I hid my father for years sober and was very, very angry when I got sober. I was very angry. It was 10 years after my father. It was 1979. It was 10 years after my father got committed suicide. I didn't believe in God. I grew up in a home that there's not a Bible in my parents' home. I was never bar mitzvahed. My parents told me we didn't need God because we had money, so we didn't have to ask for things. So it made sense to me. So we didn't have five cars in the driveway. What do we need to ask for? We don't have to ask for anything. And so when people told me about believing God, no way. I mean, God made my life miserable. He took my father away. If there was a God, then who took, he does things like that? Make my father kill himself? I don't buy this God thing. My drinking, I don't have very many drinks. My drinking stories are very interesting. I would go out and get drunk. And then I come home. Then next day, I went out and I got drunk. Then I came home. The next day, I went out, I got drunk, then I came home. And then the next day, you wouldn't imagine what I did. Next day, I went out and got drunk, and I came home, okay? I mean, this is not a real interesting drunkologue, okay? I went out and got drunk and came home. Sometimes I went out and got drunk and ended up I attempted murder against a police officer, I ended up in jail, okay? And, I took his nightstick and hit the policeman over the head. They frown on this. And so I had to go to jail. But I got out of it, dropped to a misdemeanor, and as my mom's lawyer said, the only reason is you're white and your mother has a lot of money. Okay? But if it was up to me, and I'm your lawyer, so I can't do this, I think you spending a little time in jail wouldn't hurt you. But no, I went on. That was I was 21 years old at that time, and I just went on to do other things and got into more trouble. And last 3 or 4 years of my drinking, I ended up in one mental hospital after one. They didn't have rehabs there. They were called mental hospitals. And I went to one mental hospital after another, And by the end of my drinking, my sister and my mom were thinking, where can we put him for the rest of his life? I never went to school. I left school when I was in ninth grade. I got very thirsty. And I didn't go to school. I didn't think it was important. Why to go to school? I know everything, okay? I don't need to go to school. Nothing you can teach me that I don't know, okay? And it's like when I got sober, I didn't have a driver's license, but I drove. I don't need a driver's license. I know how to drive, okay? It doesn't take a genius to know how to drive. What do I need a license for? And so my sponsor asked me, I was about 2 or 3 months sober, and my sponsor said to me, he said, do you think that it's the old Manhattan Beach clubhouse, and he said to me, do you think that you can't drink anymore? And I said, that you can't. And I said, yeah. And he said, do you think that your life's a mess? And I said, well, yeah. And then he said, can you come to believe in a power greater than yourself? I said, no, I don't. He said, are you willing to? I said, no, I'm not willing to come to believe in a power greater than myself. I don't believe there is one. And he says, well, are you willing to be willing? And I said, okay, I'll go that far. But I'm not willing to believe. And for many years, I didn't believe in God. And it's not a requirement in Alcoholics Anonymous to believe in God. It says a power greater than yourself. So that can be, I chose one, and that was Margaret Truman. I decided that nobody else would choose Margaret Truman as their higher power, okay? I mean, she was a bad pianist and wrote weird, bad books. But, it was like she was my higher power. And I decided, Margaret Truman, I turned my will and my life over to the care of Margaret Truman. She understood me. And that's what I came to. And when I got sober, I was living in my back of my car because my mom had kicked me out of my house. This old car I had, and I'd had a job for about 6 months at the phone company, and I never had a job before. And I was 28 years old, and I had gotten a job at the phone company, and I was a telephone operator. And when I got when I was there, it was one of the greatest lessons I ever learned in Alcoholics Anonymous. And when I was there, I working late one night, and I told a customer, you know, to screw yourself and whatever. And the supervisor was there, and she overheard me, and I saw this hand come pull the plug out, and she took me into her office. And I said, you know, I was like 6 months sober. I remember saying, I'm sober. I'm a sober alcoholic, and I am. You don't understand, you know. Oh, nobody knows the trouble I see, you know. And you know, you don't understand what I'm going through. She sat and listened to me, and then she said, you know, Nancy. Her name was it's Nancy. And Nancy said, you know, my mother's 25 years sober in alcohol. So 30. My mother was 30 years sober. I'm like, 30 years sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. And she's always told me, just because I don't get any extra privileges just because I'm an alcoholic. And I'm going to do you a favor, and instead of firing you, I'm going to give you a 3-day suspension. And it was a great lesson I learned. You know, alcoholics are the only people that we get a gift and we expect an award for it. Okay? I don't know if my life's gotten better, but I've certainly gotten better ways of dealing with it. I don't have any, you know, bells and whistles in my pocket. I don't have any, there's no, you know, there's nothing that the highest degree we get here is sober. That's the best we get. It's unbelievable. I mean, they told me I would get sober, and I got it. Yes, my life seems better. The promises come true because normal people get those promises in their life without doing anything. We get it because we have to stop drinking, and then those promises come true, which are not really that great. You know, it doesn't say we will get a lot of money. It says we'll know that, you know, financial insecurity will leave us. Yes, financial insecurity has left me. I still have bills, okay? That doesn't go with being an alcoholic. I remember when I was newly sober and I put all my bills on the table like this. And I'd say, God, remove them. And I'd try it again. I go, God, remove them. It didn't work. And then I tried another prayer because I hated everybody in it. Get Joe drunk, okay? And then I would go to the meeting and he'd still be sober, and I'd tell my sponsor, this is not working, okay? This prayer thing is not working. One day I was at a meeting and I was newly sober, and my sponsor, I would go up to people who were new and I would tell them they weren't ready to get sober and they need to drink more. And my sponsor overheard me and said, why did you do that? I said, well, you told me I was the most important person in the room, and I wanted to stay that way, okay? So I want to be the most important person, then there can't be any other newcomers, so they have to go out and drink. And my sponsor said, do a newcomer a favor and don't talk to any of them, okay? And I yelled and screamed in meetings. I wanted to prove that people weren't going to like me. Because I didn't like myself. I'm still not real good in the self-esteem area. I'm still not good. I don't like the F word, feelings. I'm still not real good with that, okay? But all I have to do, the easiest thing I do, is not drink. The hardest thing I do is stay sober. And what I mean by that is not drinking is easy, okay? Not drinking, but it's staying sober. It's facing all this stuff that we have to do every day. I'm one of the fortunate people. When I was I was 11 and a half months sober, and I decided I was going to go out and get drunk. And it was 12 o'clock at night, and I lived in this little house in Redondo Beach and a little guest house behind this house, and I was going to go out and get drunk. But my sponsor said, always make the checklist. So, okay, the checklist. I went, did I go to a meeting today? Did I call my, yes. Did I call my sponsor? Yes. Did I talk to another alcoholic? Yes. Did I pray? Not. I'm not going to pray. I don't believe in God. So, I got it. So I'm sitting there. I get this little table. Now, I really feel, I mean, I didn't want to call my sponsor and wake him up. And I really feel that sometimes when people go out, they don't even feel good enough to call somebody. It's not that they were arrogant. I think a lot of times just don't feel good enough. We're not important enough for someone to take our call. And so I was sitting there in this little tiny place, and there was a little table, and it had a little meeting directory, and the meeting director said, if you have a problem with alcohol, call this number. It was AA Central Office. And a month before that, AA Central Office had started to answer phones 24 hours. And this woman answered the phone, and she stayed on the phone from 12 to 2. She kept putting me on hold. She'd take other calls, and she said, I'll stay on the phone. She said, if you stay on the phone to 2 a.m., I won't be able to go down to Boys Market and buy booze, and I can stay sober. And she stayed on the phone. And I only remember one thing she said, and that was, she said, I came in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous. I never tapered off. I always tapered on. And I remember that. And then, and I never prayed in my life. I never grew up in a home that prayed. And at the end of this call, I get a little goosebumps when I tell this story. At the end of the call, she said to me, do you feel like you're going to stay sober? I said, I really feel like I have a friend. I feel like somebody understands me. And at the end of that call, I had a little bed in the corner, and I got down on the bed. For some reason, to this day, I don't know why, I got on my knees and I said, God, please remove my obsession to drink. I never wanted to return again. I have never wanted to drink since that day. Never. I have never desired it, never wanted it. Was it magic? I don't know. What I believe is, I don't believe God keeps me sober, but I believe that my faith and my belief in God keeps me sober. There was a, Dr. Martin Luther King once said, the first step is having faith when you can't see the staircase. And I think that's what it takes, really, for me to do the first step. Every day, when I get up in the morning, I said to two guys I sponsor, both 19 years sober, I said, what's the first thing you do when you get up in the morning? And one said, well, first thing I do is go to the bathroom, have a cup of coffee, get on my knees and pray. And I said, well, you want to know what I do? What's that? The first thing I do in the morning is I don't drink. There, I did the first step. Okay. Second thing I do in the day is I come to with a cup of coffee and a cigarette, and then I believe in God, okay? Because I don't believe in God till I have a cup of coffee. Someone said, you don't, I said, God knows I don't talk to anybody until I have a cup of coffee, okay? All right? So, I got my cup of coffee, I go out on my balcony, I look down on Franklin Avenue, I see the palm trees there, I live in Runyon Canyon, and then I start feeling better. And then the third step is, all it is about the third step is make a decision. It's not about turning, the part that's not about the third step, it's not about turning the God, will over to God. It's about making a decision. I'll give you an example. See, I'm the kind of person, if I go to get a hot dog, okay, I get one with mustard and one with ketchup. I get the one with mustard. Now I pine for the one with ketchup, okay? And I think my life could be better if I had the one with ketchup. And you know what? Fuck this whole goddamn thing. I don't even like lunch. I don't like you, and I don't like anybody. And you know what? I'm going to get drunk because I got the wrong damn hot dog. For me, making a decision is a world event, okay? All the third step asked me to do is make a decision. My sponsor explained it to me. He said, well, if you went down to LAX and you got in the airplane, the pilot's there, and the pilot said, you know what, I've never flown before, but I've made a decision to fly this plane. What would you do? I said, I'd get the hell out of there. Okay? So all I'm asking you to do is make a decision. Don't have to turn it over to God yet. Okay? He said, my sponsor said, you're only learning how to fly. You get to fly when you get to the 11th step. Okay. So then the fourth step. Okay. Fourth step is it's really simple. It's just writing down a few things. I think that I really believe that to some people who talk, some of us talk a lot. Okay? And we get our stuff out in meetings, and we're sober a month, and we've already gotten all this stuff out, and we got a lot of stuff out with our sponsor. So by the time we get to the fourth step, there's really not much to write. Some of us are more quiet, and we need to write more. I don't think there's any rule or any set way to do it. I think that, you know, even back in the history of Alcoholics Anonymous, back in the early 50s, four steps were taught and not written. So, whatever. Now, the fifth step I look at, since I'm an ex-felon, I've been asked this when I was in court, you know, the fifth, they take the fifth. I refuse to answer on the grounds that it might incriminate me. And the fifth step to me is I have to answer on the grounds that it will free me. So that's the fifth step. Then I sometimes will mix the sixth and seventh step up. You see, when I was drinking, I'll ask you the seventh step, then I'll get ready, okay? All right? But I'm not going to get ready if you don't do what I ask you to do. Right? But you see, in the steps it says, let's get ready, and then we ask. Okay? That was a new way of doing things for me. Because I'm only going to do it if you. Okay? So then the eighth in my day, so the getting ready, I get ready. I go to a morning meeting every morning. Twice a week I make coffee there. And so I walk down the street. And when I do that, is I have to get ready and then make decision to go to the meeting. I can't lie in bed and sit there and think. You know, I think the one I hate they put in the walls of is think, think, think. As much as it be stink, stink, stink. I mean, thinking is stinky as stink. I mean, I don't know. I don't think thinking is really a good idea for any alcoholic. But I could sit there. So there's been mornings where I have my morning meeting, but I am going to think things out. Okay? I'm going to figure it out. Okay? Now I can't figure out anything. So I got to go to the meeting and I got to listen to other people. And if I go to a meeting thinking, because I need a meeting, I won't get anything out of it. But if I go to a meeting because I want to give something, I'm going to get something out of that meeting. Okay, and I think, oh God, you know, I get a shrimp, I'm 30 years sober, and those people come up to me, even with 10, 15 years, they say, oh good you're here, I'm so glad you're here, Jim. So, maybe that's my responsibility to do that. And so, every day I got to do that, the sixth and seventh step. Then the eighth step, I got to make a list, and sometimes in my head, sometimes I can't always just make the list on a piece of paper. Oh, list, okay, the things I'm going to do today. I remember when I was newly sober, that list was really, really long. Now it's like one or two things, because I really know I can only usually get one or two of those things. You know, there's something going on. My mom fell yesterday, a couple of days ago. I had to take her to the hospital. A lot of things, different things happen. I take her to the doctor. Different things happen. And so I make one or two things. And then the ninth, what did I do? What did I do that somebody that maybe I have to make an amends to today? And then the 10th and 11th, 12th. Which are hard for me sometimes. Clean house, clean my physical house, it's really hard for me. You know, I'm waiting for the maid to come. I don't have a maid, but I'm waiting for them to come. Okay? And so I'll clean it tomorrow. Why do it today when you're going to do it tomorrow? That's always my philosophy. And so I maybe pick up a couple of dishes and put them. I see it's very difficult because I have to take the dishes out of the sink and I have to put them in the dishwasher, and then I have to turn on the dish. Oh, we have to put soap in. Then you have to turn on the dishwasher. It's very difficult sometimes. So I have things to think about, okay? And when I'm thinking about things, I can't do anything, okay? So I stop thinking, and I go do these things. And then 10 and 11, trust in God. And I'm not sure what God is, but I believe that God, there's no big God out there, that God comes through everybody. And I believe, I'm not sober by the grace of God, but I'm sober by the faith of the God. And the faith of the God are the people in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And if I sit and I look down, I'm going to know the God of linoleum if I look at the floor. But if I look up at you, I get to see your smiling faces. And maybe I'll see that newcomer in the corner who doesn't want to say the prayer. And I wink at him and he knows it's okay that he didn't say the prayer. And so I get a connection with somebody in that room. I've had a lot of... I don't know how much time I have. Okay. When I was... I had a few relationships sober. It's still hard for me to say. I'll tell you that. I guess it's my age. I'm gay. And I guess it's because of my age. When we came out, you know, well, you know, I mean, you know, Judy Garland, you know, that was about it. I mean, I didn't, what was gay, you know? Oh, he watched the Barbara Streisand movie, I guess he's gay, you know. One of the guys I sponsored said to me, he said, "Jim, you don't have to tell them." I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "They know." He said, I said, "How do they know?" He said, "Because you call everybody honey, okay? And gray men don't do that." And so I had like a couple of 10-year relationships, 5-year relationship. And when after the 10-year relationship, I didn't get involved with anybody because I couldn't get a third person involved. I was very involved with myself. And I didn't have time for that. I went to Al-Anon one meeting, met a nice guy, and had an affair on the side. And if you want to have an affair, go to Al-Anon. They love drama. So, I'm sorry. You know, what happens to an Al-Anon when they die? Somebody else's life goes before their eyes. Anyway, I had the relationships, and then I was always really healthy all my sobriety. And when I was 25 years sober, just before my 26th birthday, I was at home one night. I was living by myself. Now I'm a house in Burbank, and I got up and I felt like this little like I had heartburn or something. So I got up and I get some water, and the next thing I know, I was sitting down on the couch. I couldn't breathe. And I called my doctor, and he said, call the paramedics. I called the paramedics. They took me to the hospital. They couldn't find anything wrong with me, but I couldn't breathe. The next night, about 3 o'clock in the morning, same thing happened, but I fell on the floor, and I had a massive coronary. And I was rushed to Cedars, and 48 hours later, I was in under the knife, an open-heart surgery, replace most of my heart, or aortic valve, the main part of my heart. And I thought, you know, okay, God's, I remember right, and I was really angry for years. And I remember right before that happened, I thought, you know what, right before they took me into surgery and they said, "We're going to put you under," I thought, "I don't know where I'm going, because this is, you know, I mean, the doctor didn't tell me you died, they don't tell you that, but he told me it was a very, very, major operation." And I said, "You know what? I don't know where I'm going because I don't believe in heaven or hell, but I don't want to go there angry." And I got out of there and I got out of the surgery, and, you know, I was in ICU. Most people are in 2 days. I was in 10 days in ICU. They had to rush me back to do another operation. Got out of that. And I thought, you know, oh, God's like, this is it. I'm relieved of all my pain, anger, and so forth. But 6 months later, it started to come back again. 7, 8 months later, 9 months, I broke my back. I was walking up, broke my back. Fell down, broke my back. Okay? Go to the hospital, go through a lot of pain, 2 months of pain. I've got metal things up and down my back. I start to think, feels it better. That God's trying to tell me something, because a year later, it's Halloween night, and I fall down again, I break my neck. Okay? That God's trying to tell me something. Now, I'm going to do it my way. Year later comes by, I'm moving into my new condo, I trip and I break my knee. Okay, I guess I said, you know what, I think I got to surrender something, okay? There's like a major clue here, okay? Something's going on that tells me I need to surrender something, okay? And I was holding on to all that bad, I was holding on to a lot of shit for many years, okay? It's interesting, I've seen more people who, I think, you know, there's an old saying, when the going gets tough, the tough stay sober. When the going gets good, the good get drunk. I've seen more people who've had the sobriety, they have good sobriety, and they get drunk. Now, I don't know who the winners are. I don't stick with the winners. And one day at a time, it's O-N-E, it's not W-O-N. We didn't win anything, okay? So I stick with the winners. Okay? And the one-ers are the people that do it one day at a time. I am no more deserving of sobriety than the man in the room that has had a drink today and has came to a room of Alcoholics Anonymous. I am no better than him. And when I start thinking I'm better than him, I'm probably start thinking about a drink, because I am better than you. And I am no better than you. I am no better. I've just 30 years, 1 month, and 10 days, one day at a time. That's it. I get nothing extra here. I don't get a great life. I don't get all that. Okay? A lot of stuff happens. Oh, you'll like this one. A guy took a week ago, 2 or 3 weeks ago, my sister, out of our trust, we have a trust with my mom, and but took some money out and bought a brand new car, $40,000 car, cash, and I bought this really nice car. And it's got this automatic thingamajing at the back, and so I'm in my condo building, and being not like, because there was a guy I'm supposed to drop something off, I want to impress him, so I'm going to get my car out there to impress this person. I have a new car, okay? Because people are very impressed by your new car. So I have to get my new car out there to impress him, and so instead of not looking where it says back door open, the back hood open, this back hood's open, I'm driving through the garage, it hits a pipe and smashes the whole back window. So I guess, who am I impressing, okay? So I drive it outside. He's standing outside. I said, I guess you're not impressed about my black window, are you? And I drove off to the Ford dealer and got it fixed. They give me a rental car. The rental car gets stripped, okay, in front of my building. All right? I don't think it's because God doesn't like me. I think he's way too busy with starving children in Asia, okay? I don't think that he's that busy that he's doing this. I believe that shit just happens. It's part of life, okay? And that one of the things is that most people in this world, this is a shock for us, but most people in this world don't drink. And they have problems. They have fears. You know, my mother, 95, believe me, 94 and a half, she is living her life one day at a time. We think it's some concept. One day at a time. Nobody else has to do that except we alcoholics. Or people will say, alcoholics are the nicest people in the world. Funny, only alcoholics say that, okay? I've never heard anybody else tell us that we were the nicest people in the world. People tell me, I only say, do exactly what it says in the book. I said, well, you didn't read the book. See, it says, our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. Guess when people say they're recovering. It says in the book, we're recovered. What is recovering? I go skiing, and when I go skiing, I broke my leg. And while my leg is in a cast, I'm recovering. But when I get out of the cast, I've recovered from that breaking my leg. Doesn't mean that I can't go skiing again and break my leg again, okay? I am recovered, okay? Recovering to me seems like this, kind of like opening a can, but the can opener doesn't quite work and you never quite get there. I mean, that's kind of like what recovering, oh my God, I'm never going to open this can. I mean, that's what it's like to me. I've recovered. You've got one day, and I've got 30 years, and we're both recovered, and we're both doing on the same path. I might have more time behind me. I just got the same amount of time in front of me. I'm no better. And I have to say that. You know, I tell people, I say this a lot of times in meetings, I'm an idiot. And they say, what do you mean you're an idiot? I said, well, you know what a definition of an idiot is? A definition of an idiot is you can do simple tasks with supervision. Now, I can stay sober with the help of my sponsor, okay? So a simple task, stay sober, help of my sponsor. I used to think I was so deep. My sponsor, when I was new, I said, my father was a psychiatrist. I said, I know a life not examined is not worth living. And he said to me, honey, a life not lived isn't really worth examining. And that is true. I thought I had such deep feelings. I'm about as deep as a Petri dish, okay? I'm not that deep. I'm not that deep. I'm just really am not. And when I realized that, I got along in life a lot better. Yeah, I go to therapy. I started therapy again because there's things I want to find out about my life. But I used to go. See, I didn't go to therapy. My sponsor told me no therapy until I was 10 years sober because he said you have to put everything you have into Alcoholics Anonymous. Maybe by 10 years, because when you're newly sober, you don't know what your problems are. And by the 10 years sober, you might know what your problems are. So I went to therapy, but I would go to therapy and I'd be real dramatic and go, now I'm not. Now I can talk about what's going on with me, and there's things that I still want to change. And they say, we seek outside help. But thank God I put everything I have in one basket in that first 10 years. I didn't go to other programs. I didn't do other things because I had to really get Alcoholics Anonymous knocked into my head to know that I'm an alcoholic from the bottom of my soul. Because I remember when I was 5 years sober, and I don't say this to offend anybody, but I'm going to tell you what my sponsor said when I was 5 years sober. When I was 5 years sober, we had a nice relationship. I had a great house, Hill of Silver Lake, you see downtown. I had a new car, partner had a new car. And I went to my sponsor and I said, do you know what, I think I'm a normal person. I don't think I'm an alcoholic. And he said, well, first, you're going to have to ask, can't ask me, because I wouldn't know. I'm not a normal person. So he said, but I have an exercise I want you to do every morning. And every morning, I want you to take this finger and put it in the air. I said, okay, now what? He goes, now, take that finger and stick it up your ass. and then pull it out. And if your shit still stinks, you're probably an alcoholic. And, you know, I needed that kind of graphic, not like, oh, you need to talk to God about this, pray. I didn't need that, okay? I needed someone to say something real practical to me, because that's the kind of person I am, okay? I was never, nobody has ever used the word dainty about me, okay? And when I was drinking, I was not dainty. At the end of the night, I drank. I drank what I call cigarettes and bourbon. You know, cigarettes left in the that you just suck them through your teeth and you drink, okay? And I didn't brush my teeth for years. I had a very busy schedule. And I, beautiful teeth. Yes, of course they are. They're not mine. You know, I paid for them. They're mine. I was never dainty. And I was a real brash, drunk, down, out, drunk, amphetamine addict. And so the way I had to get sober was a school of hard knocks. And I had a sponsor, my first sponsor, Michael, who's still sober 34 years. Paul Farmer would be sober 42 years if he was still alive. And I had sponsors to joke with me and made jokes with me. I remember when my first sponsor said to me, I said, well, you don't seem to understand. Yes, you have a nice little house here in Manhattan Beach, but I'm from Beverly Hills. And he said, oh, I noticed you're sleeping in your car. What are you doing? Waiting for escrow to close? Yes. And I needed somebody like that. I needed sponsors that talked back to me and were sarcastic and didn't take my shit. Because that's the kind of person I am. And so we find the sponsors we need. There's no firing of a sponsor. You never hired them. Just go on to, well, what do I tell the old one? You don't have to tell him anything. Just go on to somebody else. If it doesn't work for you, go on to somebody else until you find the person you connect. My sponsor was my sponsors have been, and my sponsor today is my best friend. Okay? I mean, he's one of my best friends, you know. He's a good friend. But I know when I need friend, he's friend. When I need sponsor, I know I can say to Bill LaValle, da, 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 and he'll say da. And he won't let me get away with shit. He won't let me get away with something. He doesn't believe in writing. It's just like, this, what do you think of doing? Dun, dun, dun. And that's what I need. Because, see, I can't tell anybody I sponsor what to do, because I don't know what to do. I need to ask direction. It says, and it says, am I willing to let go? If I'm willing to let go, I can't tell anybody what to do. But what I can do is I can share with the guys I sponsor my experience, strength, and hope. I can share what I've done to keep sober. And if I don't have that experience, then I send them off to somebody else that does. Hey, you know what? I know so-and-so. Go talk to so-and-so because they got that kind of response. They know. They've been through that. And sponsorship and service are one of the greatest. I make coffee twice a week and the morning meetings on Tuesday and Wednesday at 6 o'clock in the morning. On Thursday and Friday, I do a volunteer of managing a Elano Club on Sunday and Monday. I answer phones at Central Office in Los Angeles. And I really believe that the service is really good for me because it gets me out of myself. So I stop thinking. Okay, I'd be home thinking. I always think, you know, I retired 7 years ago. I had this great job, and I retired. I got early retirement from that wonderful job, and I don't need to work for the rest of my life. But in so doing and not having to work, I would see myself being like the guy in the big book. And I tell this to everybody. I would say, I could be the guy in the big book that sits on this couch. I got the 52-inch TV. Changing channels. Well, I'd probably hire someone to change channels and bring me liquor. So I'm so lazy, okay? I'm lazy, okay? I would call up, you know, the liquor store, and I could see myself just being on that couch because my whole life today is full of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm always doing something in Alcoholics Anonymous. And it is my life. And I used to hate those people that said, oh, my whole life is AA. Ew. Okay. Oh, now I've become, you know, it's like this bumper sticker I showed to my sister. I said, it says, oh, my God, I've become my mother. And, you know, it's like, you know, that's the same kind of thing. It's like, oh, my God, I became that person, Alcoholics Anonymous, I never thought I would be. I'm a person that just loves AA, and I'm AA, and the only thing I want to talk, it's like I'm sort of an Alcoholics Anonymous idiot savant. You know, I the only thing I can talk about is, you know, you start talking about like Obama, I go, yeah, well, just him at the 12th step, baby. You know, I can't really talk about much more than Alcoholics Anonymous, and I have really no other interests outside of Alcoholics Anonymous. I really realize it's really true. It's very sad. But I don't stand up when they say, do you want to sponsor? Because I think it's a program of attraction rather than promotion. And, you know, if you want what I have, come and get it. You know, I'll be more than happy to hand it to you. When I was 12 years sober, I said, come and get it. I don't want it anymore. I'm sick of it. But I've always gone to meetings. I've always shared at meetings. I've always said exactly what's on my mind. And people in out, you know, I was a little scared before I started up here. I said, you know what? It's okay to be scared. It's okay. It's part of being human. I am so glad one of the things I learned from having open heart surgery is I'm glad I'm alive. I'm glad I feel anger. I'm glad I feel pain. I'm glad I feel joy. I'm glad I feel anything because I could have been 6 feet under. So that I lived through that. I've got a good heart now, and I don't know how much time do I have left. Do I have any time? 4 minutes. What can I? I don't think anybody can talk anybody into staying sober or coming to Alcoholics Anonymous and saying it's going to work. We have to experience on our own. You have to come here and really find out what it is. I mean, nobody. Meetings don't keep me sober. Sitting in the back of the room, putting a dollar in the basket, it's never kept anybody sober. I don't think reading the book doesn't keep me sober. Working the steps doesn't keep me sober. But you know, I don't know what keeps me sober. So I go to a meeting, I take the steps, I take that alcoholic who calls me up and says, I need a ride to a meeting. I do all those things because I'm not sure what's going to keep me sober today. I don't have a fear. I'm not afraid that I'll drink. I'm afraid that you know what's even more scarier? Is that the fear that the desire will come back. That's what scares me. That one day I'm just going to have that desire. You know, you always hear those, you know, German legends. Oh, he was 30 years sober and speaking everywhere. And then one day he went home and he picked up a drink. It's like, oh, I don't believe that. You know, I just don't. I don't buy those kind of things. And it's, you know, if you're 30 days sober, a few, you know, the slip comes maybe a week before. But if you're 30 years sober, people I've known have gone out after 30 years. That slip came 5, 7, 8 years before. They weren't going to meetings. It weren't just like one day it didn't just happen. Okay? I mean, I've known people that were circuit speakers and they short circuited, okay? It's hard to believe their own bullshit, okay? I don't want to get like that. I don't want to short circuit, okay? So I got to call myself, I call myself stupid, not because, my sponsor, because I need to know that I'm not too smart. And I said to my sponsor recently, I said, you know, I like everybody in AA. He said, how can you like everybody in AA? I said, well, I like how that one works with newcomers. I like how that one is of service. I'd like that one to go jump in a lake. I'd like everybody in Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's like any organization, anywhere we go, there are people I wouldn't even have drank with. Why would I want to go to lunch with them, okay? There's people in here, there's some people I say, it's good to see you. There's other people who say, how are you doing? Some people, I don't care how they're doing, so I don't ask them how. They might tell me, you know, you ask an alcoholic how they're doing and they're going to tell you. And it goes on and on and on. By the way, that the program for people who go to too many 12-step programs is called On and On and On and On. And so, with that, I'll step down and leave it to you.